great to have baseball back. This is On the Mark. See you every Wednesday at noon Central Time. Jake Valeris, good to see you, buddy.
How's it going?
We're starting with Giancarlo Stanton, his Yankee home debut. Did not go particularly well. 5 at-bats, 5 strikeouts. You could have done just as good as Giancarlo Stanton. And Yankee fans, not Philly fans, Yankee fans, they are a little hostile in New York too, booing Giancarlo Stanton, the man who had 59 home runs, the NL MVP, the man who had 2 home runs on opening day, and they're booing him. So we start there, Jake Valeris. Was it wrong for New York to turn on Giancarlo Stanton in game one at home? This is not the way life should be.
Not only has my opinion on this changed, it was my mind was changed by Giancarlo Stanton. When I read this, I was like, oh, they're booing him. Why are they doing that? That's mean. He's good. He hit two, like, he's clearly good. He's National League MVP. What are we talking about? And then I saw his post-game interview by his locker, and all the reporters are asking him, oh, they're booing you. What's up with that? And he was like, I sucked. You deserve to be booed when you play like that. And I was like, fair point.
Well, okay, so there was a great Chicago Cub back in the day. Alfonso Soriano signed a huge deal.
He was unrelated.
Right. Well, the point is that he got booed, and he would always say the same thing. Fans can do whatever they want. There's a ton of players throughout time. That's what you say. You never say, screw the fans, because that's a bad way to go. You always say, hey, they paid their money. They deserve to. I was terrible. It's okay. Booing is part of the deal. Like, I get the mature take, but he just...
I don't think it's classy, but do you expect anything else from Yankees fans?
Yes.
That is what makes New York what it is. That's what makes playing that in that environment so special. I mean, I hate that team, but, you know, give them credit. To be a great Yankee, you got to turn up. You got to be able to deal with the extra crap that comes. And this is true across their teams, not just the Yankees. And I think this is aggressive first home game. He's been good before this game. And, you know, maybe you can say have a little class, but I'm okay with it. I really am. This is kind of surprising to me. I didn't expect that I would be, but I really am.
Hold on a second. When you go to a game and one of your players who you root for stinks, do you boo him?
No.
You don't?
No.
But you don't hold other fans to the standards that you bring for yourself?
Yes. I wouldn't really call them standards. To me, I would call them a philosophy of about, you know, how I think about watching the game, what I'm there for as a fan. I'm not there to heckle guys. You know, that's just not my personality. It's not why I would spend the money on a ticket. But if you want to do it, go ahead. It's not my problem.
Okay, so you're letting everyone live their life.
Yes. So, freedom of booing.
So let's say it's a huge, important game, and you want your guys to have the best frame of mind, right? And if the dude strikes out 3 times his first time up, he might have a 4th time. This game's really important. You want him in a positive frame of mind, and everyone's booing him. Would that bother you?
If there's real evidence to suggest the guy is being psyched out by the crowd, and so, this is true. Some guys this happens to, you know.
It can't help, can it, right? Getting booed, there's no way that maybe that.
I mean, if you're wired right, some guys, you know, that's going to get them going. That's going to be, I'm going to prove these idiots wrong. You know, I wouldn't want that sort of relationship with my own home fans, but, you know, everyone's different. These are hyper-competitive guys, and I think Stanton's going to be all right.
For the record, he struck out 4 times swinging, 1 time looking, 3 times against Chris Archer, 1 against relievers Austin Pruitt and Sergio Romo. 5 strikeouts in the game has been done 8 times by a Yankee, the last one to do it. I'm guessing you don't know that. Neither did I until looking it up. David Adams, 2013.
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, right. So, at any rate. But here's one little variable that I want to throw out there.
Okay.
It was a brutal weather day in the Bronx. 4 inches of snow at the start of the day. We shouldn't be playing baseball. It's freezing out there. You have the pure diehards who are left in the 8th inning. For his 5th strikeout, that are sitting there in 3.5 hours of cold because they just love the Yankees that much, or because they have nothing else to do, or because they're really drunk and they don't feel the cold. So at that point, like to the diehard point, like if you're willing to sit out there in 3.5 hours of cold to the 8th inning to watch Giancarlo Stanton in an 11-4 win, by the way, game was close for a while, but an 11-4 win, I'll give you the right to
right.
Boo.
Right, and I mean also to build off of that, like people who don't care don't boo. No one's like, oh, yeah, I guess I'll go to the Yankees this afternoon. Some tickets fell in my lap. Nobody boos who goes to a game like that. They sit there, they drink their beer, they eat their popcorn, whatever it is. They're not booing a guy. If you're booing someone, it's because you really care or you're, you know, unhinged or whatever.
I once booed Todd Zeal when he was a Cub.
I mean,
Todd Zeal.
So basically,
and I felt like a complete idiot.
But you did it.
But I did it.
That's
it
what
happened.
Counts.
But it was a weak moment for me.
I bet he remembers your face.
He stared, and I had a great seat. He stared right in the crowd. Like, I think he was looking for me. I think I hit. All right, let's move on to on the field, the fascination that is Shohei Ohtani.
Yes.
First major league at bat, he gets a single. His first MLB start, he gets a win, looked nasty on the mound. And then last night, first home game, first at bat, two strikes, three-run homer, goes 3-for-4 in an Angels win. Before Shohei Ohtani, the last player to win a game, hit a first-inning home run within the next 2 days, that would be Babe Ruth, June 13 and 14, 1921. Shockingly, was not
no?
alive at that point. No. So the point here is you look at Shohei Ohtani, great story, maybe going to be the great story of the whole year. And simple question, can more people, will there be more Shohei Ohtanis in the future? Guys that pitch, guys that hit. I'll let you start. I have my thoughts on this. It's kind of amazing to me, actually, I'll go ahead here, that there aren't more Shohei Ohtanis, but go ahead.
No. This is not something that's determined by how cool it is. You know, we could say, oh, why aren't there more Mike Trouts who can do every single thing in the game extremely well? The issue isn't that it's not a good or valuable thing to have on a team. The issue is you need to be absurdly talented to be able to do that. The reason we don't see more of them is because nobody's that good. I mean, even pitchers who have, you know, some sort of track record at the plate, who have, you know, occasionally hit home runs. And there are a few pitchers around baseball who are like that, especially in the National League, guys who have a bit of power, maybe come with a big hit now and then. But to be so good that you justify a regular place in the lineup that might jeopardize your ability to pitch at the top of your game, people aren't that good. You can't be going to a little kid and say, hey, I want you to be the next Shohei Ohtani. That, you know, if he turns out to be that good, maybe fair enough, we'll talk about it then. But you can't base precedence on just a freak of nature talent like this.
So I'm going to go back in time and imagine the same conversation was had at some point. You can't hit both lefty and righty. You're good as a righty. You can't be good as a lefty. And then somebody, you know, then switch hitters came along, right? The best players, when you're growing up, they're normally the pitchers, and then they step up and they hit 500 in Little League and high school. I mean, that's how it goes. So I don't really understand how it couldn't happen on the big league level. And we're always raising the bar, right? People are working out harder. They're working out longer. They're working out smarter. You can't tell me that. And yes, you have to be really talented, but you're a professional athlete playing professional baseball. You're a really talented person. I'm just surprised that more people haven't figured this out. You don't have to spend your whole life pitching all day long and hitting. You can, here's a nice solid 1 hour block I'm going to hit every day, or 30 minutes, whatever it is. And then I'm going to, you know, and then I'm going to go to and throw my side. I don't see how it's, I think that it will happen.
As far as MLB teams are concerned, it's about maximizing the talent at your disposal. What we've seen that means over the past, you know, decade plus is increased specialization. We now have a starting pitcher. We have a pitcher for the seventh inning, the eighth inning, the ninth inning. We have pitchers who come in to get out the lefty in the lineup. Everything is so – we even now have platooning in the field where guys are coming in for specific scenarios to do specific things.
Right, we're going to have somebody run with their right leg and the other one's going to run with their left. But
exactly.
I get
and
it.
The
yeah.
thinking behind this is that, okay, we have a guy who's extremely good in these situations. We want to maximize his talent in those situations. By far the most specialized talent in Major League Baseball, possibly in any professional sport anywhere, is starting pitching. That is a very, very unique skill that a lot of guys can't do. If you have a lights-out starting pitcher, Clayton Kershaw level, you know, Shohei Ohtani level, what he was in Japan, you do not compromise that by getting maybe a slightly above-average bat in the lineup. Those guys are knocking around all over the place. So you maximize the most high-leverage skill that you have, and you ensure that it is able to execute the highest level it can.
You're also trying to maximize your roster, right? If you have this guy who can be your DH and your pitcher, that's a huge edge. And you're right. You're not going to mortgage a great pitcher for somebody who's going to hit 200. Shohei Ohtani is getting this opportunity because he's potentially going to be a great hitter too. He hit, I mean, and on the mound, early going for me, I like him on the mound. he's throwing 96, 98, 99, 98, 100 mile an hour fastballs. Then he's got a nasty split, and he can throw a changeup too. That stuff looks overpowering. At the plate, I don't really like his swing. Like, he's moving a lot. He looks susceptible to the inside fastball. The ball he hit out yesterday was a curveball. It was slow. It was hanging. It was in the inside portion of the plate. He should have whacked it. I'm a little skeptical on his hitting, but so there's that. But again, as raising the bar here, a super talented guy, I don't see why you can't figure out how to do both. And especially if you're a starter, and now starters, hey, we can't let you throw over 100 pitches. We got four other days. You should be well rested. You can't go out there and DH.
Well, look, first of all, it's definitely cool. Would I hate it if guys were doing this more often? You know, if they were like, oh, hey, Madison Bumgarner. I mean, he's injured now, but here, bat in the lineup every 3 days, whatever. Yeah. You know, that would be cool. I would enjoy to see that. I don't know if it's smart, but I enjoy it. But the other side of this is the big concern in the long term is health. How does a guy hold up with this sort of workload at the plate, on the mound, doing it all? We just cannot say after a week of the season. And at the end of the season, if there are serious health issues, even the Angels might have to say, damn, we got this great talent, but we just can't risk it.
Yeah, they and it's, again, it's super early, and I'm throwing out there, again, I'm skeptical on the hitting. We'll see. But it's a great story.
It is. He's fun.
This is enjoyable. Time. All right, let's talk about the Houston Astros, who got their ring yesterday. All right. The ring, the top is you got an H. It's got 11 diamonds, one for each of the games that the Astros had to win the title.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, that's
smart.
Not the most creative, right? 56 years in the making. So we got the 11 custom baguettes for the 11
baguettes,
whatever it is.
There's,
I don't
bread
even know.
On the ring?
I'm going to get to my take here in a second. The 101 diamonds for the 101 regular season wins, right?
Yeah.
56 round diamonds encircling the logo for the 56 seasons of the Astros.
Are the 56 round diamonds included in the 101 diamonds?
Are
they all separate diamonds?
Whole thing's exhausting. There is, what else do we have here? Hold on a second. There's more. We've got one side of the ring features each player's name. It's got the Astros workmark framing of the Houston City skyline. I lived in Houston. Houston doesn't have a skyline. Place is lame.
The other
side of the has the Houston strong with the small H. They're you know, capitalizing on the worldwide disasters, which is cool. They did a lot for the community. I get it. You got the commissioner's trophy. There's a single solitaire diamond there that represent the first World Series victory for the Astros and the state of Texas, because you know that's a nice troll to the Rangers there too. And then you got the LVI Roman numerals for the 56-year history. Elsewhere on the ring, I'm going to keep going here. We got 10 diamonds, one blue sapphire, represent the 11 times Houston made it to the postseason. Not the 11 wins, but the 11 times they made it to the postseason.
That's the dumbest one, so
right, I'm going to keep on going. We got two princess-cut sapphires, one orange, the other's blue. That represents Houston's unique achievement of being both in the American and the National League. Don't forget about that. They were once in the National League, now in the American League.
That's true.
The Houston Astros ring. We're going to rate it 1 to 10. Go ahead, rate the Astros ring.
I'm gonna go 1, but all World Series and other championship rings are ones in my opinion. It's weird.
See, I don't see any rings on these fingers. Now partly of that is a commitment phobe type of situation for myself, but I also, like, who would want to wear that ring? Like, the ego that it requires to wear a ring like that and walk around, want to see my World Series ring? I can't. That's a guy that I probably don't want to hang out with.
I think the rings are weird. I think they're dumb. I see people compare them, and I'm like, this is just a ring with some diamonds on it. Who cares? But I will say that they have the ring because it's a memento of the achievement. Who, you know, what kind of Olympian wears their gold medal around? That guy's an idiot, too.
Right.
This is not a thing people do. It's momentum to say, hey, I want a World Series. Here's a cool thing. I don't think guys are wearing them around outside of, the ceremony or whenever they go to the White House or whatever it is.
I would like to name that there's part of me that's incredibly jealous of professional athletes, and I give them all the props in the world for getting to this level. But when I hear him say, though, this was the dream, I always wanted this ring, I want to say, you are lying. That is not the dream. The dream was to get to the majors and actually play and make money and be on the team. Like, I don't think you, at least for me.
I think you're being a little too literal. The ring sort of represents the achievement of their professional career.
Yeah, but I hear it
you
all.
Don't. You're, as a kid, you're not like, man, I want to be the 23rd guy on the roster making 500K a year. When you're a kid, you dream of winning the World Series, and the ring is a stand-in in that phrase for the World Series. So, in conclusion, I have no idea what you're talking
about. But I guess maybe I have like a dreaming not as high level thing going on here. Like nobody I didn't dream as a kid of winning the World Series. I dreamt of playing professional baseball.
What did you achieve as a professional baseball player? Like middle reliever?
All I wanted to do was
36 innings a season.
If I got to all I wanted to do was wear the uniform and run out there, hear my name called.
I think this says a lot more about you than
Astros
players.
Well, this show is about me. By the way, I forgot a couple things on the ring. 6-round diamonds represent the 6 years that Jim Crane owned the Astros. Way to make it about you, Jimbo. That's great. Good job.
That is dumb. I will say all of these specific details are stupid.
By the way, you can get your own 112 limited edition Astros World Series championship rings if you like.
What does
the
112 mean?
Well, it's been created because of the there's 111 wins plus the 12th or something like that. The price is $11,112. All right. The symbolic price represents the Astros' 11 postseason wins. They love this 11 postseason wins thing, as if that's creative. Plus the team's overall wins, 112. 11,112 for the wins, for the thing.
Okay.
All right. Baseball's unwritten rules is next.
Okay.
Which is equally annoying, by the way. Are they dumb is the question. And it's already out there early season because of the team that you grew up rooting for, the Minnesota Twins, who had a pitcher, young pitcher by the name of Jose Berríos, who's solid and could be, who knows, a stalwart in that rotation. But so the Twins are beating the Baltimore Orioles 7-0. It's the ninth inning. Young player Chance Cisco is at the plate for the Baltimore Orioles. Okay, Berríos has only given up one hit in the game, but he has given up one hit. Ain't no hitter here, and they play the shift against Cisco. So they get three guys on the left side of the diamond to the left of second base, and then we got one person playing third base and shortstop. So, young player, Cisco, we're down 7. I want to get on, start a rally here. He drops the bunt down. Nobody's there. First base for Cisco and the Twins after the game, namely Brian Dozier, their second baseman, is just livid. Here's the quote. Obviously, we're not a fan of it. He's a young kid. I could have said something at second base when he got to second base and Dozier standing out there. But I was choosing to be passive-aggressive and talk to the media afterwards. And say that, but they have tremendous leadership over there. He's hoping that the Orioles clubhouse would handle it. Why can't a guy drop down a bunt in a 7-0 game to start a rally, Jake Valerius?
Yeah, I don't agree with the Twins on this one. I'm confused, really. I mean, this is, if you had a no-hitter, fine. They played the shift, so clearly, you know, they're still competing hard, even if it's a 7-run game. The whole thing was just bizarre, and I think, you know, Dozier doubled down more than once. He tried to clarify, and, you know, the whole thing was just weird.
Right, he keeps doubling down, saying, hey, they didn't hold a runner, so they conceded the game, which means they can't bunt. Dude, nobody told you to not steal. You could have taken the base if you wanted to, 7-0 game. Maybe you don't trust your bullpen. And different scenario. He's at the plate. He's trying to get on. They're down 7. I don't think you can like tie. They did this, so we did that. You ate this, so I can eat that. What is this? 3? Are we in kindergarten here? It doesn't work that way, does it? I don't think it should. And the other. And then we got people like Bill James out there, the father of modern analytics. You know Bill James?
Yes, I'm familiar.
He went on Twitter. This older gentleman, I love that he's social media all over it. Quote, any veteran player or manager who makes comments suggesting that a young player is doing something improper when he's simply trying to win, that's intolerable. Bill James wants like Brian Dozier suspended for 5 games for his comments.
I don't know if that's what Bill James said.
No, that's the quote. That's a quote. I mean, he didn't ask for the 5-game suspension.
That's what I'm saying.
But this is upsetting for Bill and a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing, but baseball has these rules, right? It has certain codes. And for the most part, I actually like the codes. The problem with this instance is that there was no violation. There wasn't a no-hitter on the line. They were playing the shift. So in this case, the Twins are just wrong.
All right, let's start there. It's a no-hitter. You can't bunt? You like that rule? You think that's a good unwritten rule? Can't bunt in a no-hitter. It's the sixth inning. You haven't had a hit. Can't bunt. Why would that be a rule? That's ridiculous.
I mean,
First time I've ever clearly won an argument with you before you said a word.
That's true. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's take a minute and pay your respects. But I come at it from a different angle, less sort of specific, less focused on specific scenarios. I'm thinking one of the cool things about baseball is it's got all this history behind it. It's been going on forever, by far the oldest professional game in this country. And one of the cool quirks that develops when something's been around this long is these sort of unwritten rules. You know, you do a certain thing, you can't do specific things in certain situations. You can't bat this way when a guy is up. You can only try. You don't steal a base when it's a blowout. You know, and some of this is kind of sporting stuff.
Let's say Brian Dozier's at the plate and he hits a home run off of Jose Barrios. And it goes deep into the night. Can he stand there and enjoy his moment for a second? Can he flip his bat? Or does he deserve a shot to the ear the next time he comes up? That's an unwritten rule. You can't stand there and enjoy a home run. You're annoying the pitcher.
Well, the interesting thing, though, is that these rules are always sort of – there's always a conversation
right,
around
they move
them, right? Exactly, which is why it's unwritten. If it were written, there would be specific guidelines and there would be no disagreement.
Yeah, but there's a general –
but they're unwritten, and so we have these moments where guys are sort of pushing it. Guys interpret the game differently. They feel different things about the way we should interpret this stuff. And, I mean, the Twins got called out. I think roundly the baseball world agreed that they were just wrong.
Jose Bautista's bat flip was the coolest thing ever. Was that wrong?
No, well, I didn't say it was.
But it would be in the unwritten rules. That was way too – he threw the bat too far. He stood there too long.
Yeah, I mean, if you disagree with specific instances, whatever. But it's different saying, we just eliminate all of the sort of codes that have developed around the game.
Forget a specific incident. You can't enjoy a home run, period. They want you head down, run around the bases. That's what baseball players want. Do not insult
me. It's not what all baseball players want. It's what some baseball players want.
The unwritten rules would say
I think you don't really understand the point. Like, the concept of an unwritten rule is right there in the name. It's not written down. So they don't actually say anything. There are certain sort of cultures that have developed within the game that dictate that, you know, this is a way certain people think and this is a way a lot of people do this and this is the way stuff has been done. But that's one of the fascinating things about baseball, right? Unlike a lot of other sports, there's this constant back and forth between what has traditionally been the case and what current modern players want to be the case. And I find that cool. I find that interesting. If you just want to blame everyone who enjoys anything or doesn't enjoy anything, or the reverse, that's fine by you. But I think you don't realize that you are engaging in that conversation by saying this stuff.
We're going to move on here, but I think what you're not realizing is that I enjoy players enjoying the game and I want to see it. Like, I think most fans. So some pitcher who's going to scream at a guy who just hit a home run and follow him around the bases and drill him the next time, that guy's a clown. And he's like operating on some unwritten rule. That was never written down or said, to your point. All right, let's wrap up with Gabe Kapler, the fine manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. This
Gabe,
guy's fascinating.
The man.
He loves coconut oil. We won't go deep into that, but that was one of the great blog posts in the history of baseball. And now he's early into his managerial career, and he's taking out pitchers like Aaron Nola after 68 pitches in 5 1/3 innings in a 5-0 game. And he goes to his bullpen. They end up losing the game. Then he's used 18 pitchers in 3 games, and now he's sitting down with himself to like write down a whole thing of what he's learned, and he's trying to figure things out. Gabe Kapler, early odds, worst manager of all time. Is 3 games in, you can't do worse. This guy's single-handedly losing 5-0 games. Way to go, Gabe.
What's their record?
The Phillies right now, I'm not sure their record off the top. They lost 2 of their first 3, I know that. So I want to make sure I'm right here. Our research staff is on it.
Yes, the research team.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I like him a lot.
They're 1-3.
They're 1-3. Okay, so disaster. Season over. Let's not play the last 158 games of the season, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't care what the record is. If you take out a guy after 68 pitches because you think you're some smart...
I like him. I like the guy. He's interesting. I mean, I'm not a Phillies fan. Like, I'm not going to comment on how they should be feeling about it, but... He's interesting. He is a different character to what we've probably ever seen in this sport. A huge disciple of your main man, Joe Maddon, we should point out.
Sure.
He learned a lot of this stuff from him. He's just funny. Like, he's a weird guy. He embraces it. He's clearly smart. He thinks about this sort of stuff. He's holding candle-lit interviews in his office during spring training. Got Nora Jones on in the background. This is funny. This is cool stuff. This is the sort of personality that... baseball needs. We don't need more, you know, stuffy 90-year-old men following the unwritten rules. We need cool, funny, Gabe Kapler type guys. He's a story. He's a cool guy. I like him. You know, I'm a Kapler fan.
Okay, you know who's a cool
coconut oil.
You know who's a cool
Get
guy.
Get involved.
I'll give you a cool guy. Rex Hudler's a cool guy. He does quirky things. He talks about the moon. He does a great job as a color.
He talks about the moon. He's a color commentator. What's that got to do?
He thought the moon was a planet, which was totally as far
it's
as I was
probably the sort of thing you thought until you heard him get ripped for it.
I got no problem with moon being a planet. That's great.
That's not how that works.
It's in the sky. It's a planet. You want to think that's cool? I got
planes in the sky. Is that a planet?
I think, right. Good plane, not a planet. Moon. I got no problem.
That's NASA on the phone.
I like you too. I'm not going to have you I'm not going to have you operate on me if I need.
You can't call a guy the worst manager of all time after four games of his first season.
He went to the bullpen.
So what? It's four games.
Wait, hold on. I want to get this out there clearly in case somebody missed it. He went to the bullpen to bring in Hobie Milner, who wasn't even warming up. Like, how could you possibly be that bad?
As he said afterwards, and apologized for extensively, it was a miscommunication.
Right.
So who knows? Maybe he just called the wrong number when he was trying to get the bullpen.
Is Milner ready?
No.
No, he's not even warming up. That's like, why would he be possibly ready?
You got to learn the ins and outs of the game, all right? He's figuring it out, all right?
He's a first-time manager. This just goes to show you.
There is no problem coconut oil cannot solve. So give him time.
That's an aggressive take right there.
I learned that from Gabe Kapler.
Apparently, okay. Go get. Hey, listen. I'm happy that I like entertaining people. I just am highly skeptical this is going to work out for the Phillies and their general manager Matt Kletnik, who hired Gabe Kapler after he's never managed.
Got to give it time.
Got to start things. You know, what baby steps in the minors. That would have been a good place to start if you want to be a manager. It should work that way. And this guy's also been on like six major league teams. Which is kind of amazing that he doesn't know better. All right, great stuff. Great to be with you today, Jake. It was fascinating.
Learned a lot, I think, today, about the moon and other things.
Me too. On the Mark every Wednesday at noon Central Time. Thanks for checking us out.